Welcome to episode 4 of the Rebel Army podcast. This week we have a bumper episode. We look back at a successful win over UCD. We look forward to the new women's campaign starting with head coach Danny Murphy in studio. And we also have a look at behind the scenes with commercial manager Anthony O'Sullivan. Yeah, so we're back in the studio. I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Howie. How are you?
I'm not too bad now, Stephen. I'm finally thawed out after the cold on Friday night.
Cold.
It was freezing. Absolutely freezing.
I don't think my legs were ever so cold in my life, to be honest. When I came home, I was just like, oh, I had pins and needles, and all.
It was the cold and the wind and I don't know, where we are during the game, we're up in the TV gantry where the cameras and the commentator and stuff are, and it's just a metal box. So in the summer, it becomes like a toaster and you're melting in there. And then when it's cold, it's like an ice box. You were absolutely freezing, and we take the windows out as well so that the cameras can see out to the corners and stuff, so the wind was just swirling around in there for 90 minutes. You could hear it on the commentary. Actually, Rory and Phil were just drowned out by the sound of the wind. It was absolutely Baltic on Friday,
but a good win.
Yeah, a win.
I know, it was tough. It was a tough, like, UCD were tough.
They were very good, and they were actually missing a couple of players as well. Like, oh, yeah. Ronan Finn wasn't there, who would have been the main name people were looking at when the teams came out. And yeah, a difficult one. Difficult conditions again with the weather. But Tim Clancy kind of touched on this in his interview after the game as well. Not the best performance you'll ever see, but we won the game. Yeah, that's what matters.
And a great header by Keane as well. Like,
unbelievable header, yeah.
I think Colm O'Sullivan did call out the wrong name first. Which
Charlie Lyons, I think he said.
And the whole lot of us looked at him. Yeah.
But I think it was Jack Doherty's corner again picked Keane out. There's a picture that Doug Minahan got, and Keane is head and shoulders above every other player there. He got so high for it.
Yeah.
And another one where Jack Doherty could have had another two himself. He had a snapshot early on that just went wide. He rounded the keeper and went for a goal, and it just trickled the wrong side of the post. It was one of those ones that was nearly going in slow motion. But yeah, 1-0 win. Again, performance wasn't the best thing in the world that Tim said, but you'll take a win every day of the week. We'll take 3 points happily.
And not to single out players, but another great performance by young Cathal O'Sullivan.
The flick. I know the flick is all over social media.
All over social, that's why he brought it up. Like
he's 16. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
If you haven't seen it, just put a search in probably on Twitter or something, you'll probably find it.
Yeah, I know it's on the League of Ireland TikTok and Instagram, and I'll no doubt get a TikTok out of it for us at some stage as well. But honestly, the confidence of that fella.
Yeah, brilliant.
Ridiculous.
Great to see, you know. So yeah, and to what else happened over the weekend? Was there, the Academy must have been playing, were they?
The Academy were playing, and the girls teams kicked off their season as well. So we had a full Academy lineup. It was actually, like, I don't know how this happened with the fixtures, but every team nearly played against Cove Ramblers this weekend. So
it was all derbies everywhere.
Derbies everywhere, yeah.
The scores.
The under 20 men's team were away to Wexford. Jaden Uma and Harvey Skeeter score there.
So does Jaden play like with the under 20s, but then he'd be on the bench and sometimes he comes on for the
night before for the first team? Yeah,
that happened the week before, like, isn't it?
It did, yeah. He's one of those players that's,
yeah, because he saw that last week. He went from Finn Harps, which was all the way up in Donegal, and he was playing the afternoon.
He actually, now to be fair, the team bus got back after the Harps game. I think they were back in their houses for 5:30. Jaden actually came in a car, so he got down a little bit earlier. The bus obviously has to stop and takes a bit longer. But yeah, he was in the squad for Cove, I think, the 20s played last week, and Wexford this week. Bit of an easier one this week. He played at the Cross, obviously, and then had to go to Wexford. That's much easier than coming back from Donegal. But he's one of those players that's going to get minutes for the first team as well as starting for the 20s, and he's actually eligible for the under 17s as well. So
we can't play him too much.
We can't do that much.
And how did the others get on?
So the women's under 17s were one of the first teams to play against Cove. They played in Mayfield, won that 3-0, two goals from Kate Mulcahy and one from Eva Buckley. Men's under 15s also played Cove in Mayfield. That was a 3-0 win. Lewis O'D, David Dunn and Jamie Ndewuba. Sunday, the women's 19s beat Cove Ramblers 5-0. Christina Dring, Grace Flanagan, Zoe Finnerty, Heidi O'Sullivan and Jadine Seward with the goals there. 4-1 win for the men's under 17s, also against Cove Ramblers in Bishopstown. Charlie Hanover got 2, Evan Pilo got 1 and Denzel Obenge got 1. The 14s then lost 2-1 to Cove Ramblers. Dino Halloran got the city goal for them.
But it looks like we won most of the games.
We did, yeah. It's the El Clásico, as Rory O'Hagan likes to call it on commentary. But we definitely came out on top over the weekend in those.
I spot the club are looking for a new retail assistant. Moving into town again, are we, or what?
We are, so we're trialling something over the next couple of weeks. Basically, weekends where we don't have a home game, we're going to have a stall in the Marina Market.
Okay.
Just to sort of test, it's a new audience. You know yourself, the Marina Market has
going to be a young audience down there as well.
It's a different audience to what we usually get, and the football there, especially weekends, is absolutely ridiculous.
And what will it be? Like a shop, like, or what?
Yeah, so it'll be a shop. We'll have the usual merchandise, match tickets, hats, scarves, stuff like that. As I said, it's going to be weekends where we don't have a home game initially, just to trial it. And we'll see how that goes. But we're looking to kick that off this weekend.
And the shop in Douglas is staying open.
Yeah, we'll be open in Douglas as well. Yeah.
So it'll be a bit of both.
yeah, we'll have Douglas, the Marina Market, and obviously the match night shop at Turner's Cross then as well when we are at home.
Very good. Have you been out and about this week?
We got Tim Clancy's press conference after the game on Friday. So he, kind of similar to what I was saying earlier, spoke about how the performance maybe wasn't ideal, but we won the game and he was happy with how that went.
Yeah, listen, 3 points is 3 points. I'll take another 33 of them this season. It wasn't great. I didn't think we were good tonight. I thought UCD, especially second half, were far better. But that performance showed us that there's the other side. It answered another question, which was a good check. When things aren't going well and we're not playing as well as we can be, I thought we defended really well. Dealt with a lot of crosses, tackles, blocks, balls into the box, and Brad's made a couple of saves, one was foot, I think, and the big one at the end then when the player goes in on goal and he answers that as well. So performance wise, from an attacking point of view and with the ball, not great. Without the ball was really good, and listen, it gets us 3 points.
Yeah, it's 7 points from three games. You got to be happy with that start, I guess.
We do, yeah. And I think if we look at pre-season, we conceded a good few goals against Galway and then against Pats and against Shells, and we played Premier Division clubs as a very, very young group and a new group, because it was important to learn what we want to do off the ball first rather than in possession. We'll have plenty of goals and plenty of chances created in games as the season goes on, but we wanted to have that base of understanding what to do without possession. So I think that's why pre-season was very good for us, and I think if you take away the mistake up in Finn Harps, it's two clean sheets in three games and one goal conceded, so that's the really pleasing thing.
Listen, like we said a while ago, I think, you know, it was a tough victory, but I think Tim is happy overall and he'll take those.
Exactly, yeah. Tim was very honest there in what he was saying, and that, like, football's all about results. He's happy if we win the game.
Yeah.
Ideally, you'll have a brilliant performance and a complete performance, but look, if you perform to 70% of your ability as a squad and you still win the game, 3 points are 3 points.
Yeah. So going back to the game again the other night, I think for a lot of people went under the radar. The next thing I see, Barry Coffey going down the tunnel. I must have missed it. Maybe I was in a bit of a frozen or something at the time, but I think a lot of people did.
I'd say the only person in the stadium that actually saw the challenge was the referee. I think what happened was UCD were about to launch a counter-attack and Barry Coffey tried to clip the ankles of the player that was getting away from him, but he actually missed it, and as he was coming down, he kind of came down on his heel, his Achilles type thing. The ref was right there. I didn't see it myself. I was actually on my way down from the gantry, yeah. So I completely missed it. But look, the referee was like 2 feet away from it, so I'd imagine there was no malicious intent. I think the referee was saying that afterwards, that he knew it wasn't anything nasty. It's just one of those things where unfortunately you are going to get sent off for it. But yeah, a lot of people in the stadium missed it. There was a lot of tweets kind of saying, what was that for? Yeah,
yeah, very confused. I remember I was looking at it, then he started counting because I thought maybe we brought on a sub.
And did he just go straight down the tunnel maybe? Yeah,
like maybe he's injured or something. He's just going straight down because it's nearly over anyway. And I was counting. Actually, no, we have only 9 outfield players.
Yeah, so he's missing for Saturday's trip to Longford. So
yeah, which is a bit of a blow. But speaking of Saturday, the women's team are back.
Yeah, the women's Premier Division season is kicking off. We're at home, 5 o'clock kickoff against Piemont United. Danny Murphy, as you said earlier, is the guest this week, so he'll touch more on that later on. But yeah, first home game, a difficult one.
Yeah, against one of the top teams in the
league. Exactly,
really,
yeah, champions last year. So they're probably the team, when you're looking forward to the fixture list, you don't want them first day.
Yeah.
But look, it's...
But then you get a chance to see some quality players as well, besides our own, you know what
exactly,
I mean?
Exactly, yeah, there's some players there, Ireland internationals, and it gives our squad a chance to potentially cause an opening day upset and hit the ground running.
Sometimes it could be a good time to play a big team.
Definitely, just jumping at the deep end.
Tickets are available.
They're on sale from Ticketco. You can find them on the club website. They're linked on our social media as well. That's a 5 o'clock kickoff, so you can get to the cross, you can watch that game, you can be home again in time for the 7:30 kickoff to watch the men on LOI TV. So you can have a nice Cork City filled Saturday evening there.
A Cork City evening. But look, I think, you know, it's a big game. It's the start of the season. Who better to talk about it than the manager himself? Let's bring in Danny Murphy, will we? Welcome to the podcast, Danny.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
So before we kind of touch on the women's team ahead of the new season, let's go back. Obviously, it's not a Cork accent. Grew up in London?
Yeah, grew up in London. A lot of family from Cork. My granddad's from Cork. So
is he? What part?
Yeah, he's from Kinsale.
Yeah, yeah.
So still got a lot of family down there.
So did you come over here as a kid, like, and stuff?
Yeah, so as kids, me and my little brother, we used to get, it was the old Aer Lingus flights. We used to stick you on the flight with me and my little brother.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
We used to come over. My granddad actually lived in Clare.
Yeah.
So we used to go to Shannon. He'd pick us up there. We'd spend a week in Clare, go down to come down to Kinsale, and then we'd spend a week or two in Kerry. Yeah. We have family down there as well.
And when you were growing up here, then would you play a bit of football over here in the summer and stuff like that with the local lads? And
yeah, so my granddad lived in like in Corrifin, which is like there weren't many soccer pitches around
there.
No,
there wouldn't have been. No.
But we used to do like it was interesting. It's very different kind of life because we'd come here and we'd be doing like farming side of things, and we'd be doing that. So like you got two
completely different to London. Yeah,
two London boys, two city boys that we used to think it was great fun because doing things like that is something you're never ever going to do in London. So we used to love coming over to do it. It was good fun, to be fair.
But back home then, when you were there, obviously you had a love for football at a young age because you went into the academy system at QPR, was it?
Yeah, well, I started at West Ham, actually.
West Ham?
I went into West Ham at around under-10s.
It's young, isn't it?
So, and like I lived opposite Mere Walls ground, so and I'm a Mere Wall fan, so when West Ham come asking you to come and join it, it wasn't that... the best thing to do, but like for me it was they were the best academy and they're still very strong, so it was a no-brainer really to go there over like Millwall and other clubs because you knew the players that they had and the caliber of players and the coaches and stuff that did it. You was always going to get the right education in terms of
and
football.
You're talking the early 90s there, around that time.
No, 2000s. The early 90s.
So Harry Redknapp and stuff, and Frank Lampard's dad and stuff, being in charge of the senior team at that stage.
Yeah, they were the managers of the senior team at the time, and you see, like, even you know at that age, like going in there, and they knew everyone. Like they would come in, they'd say hello to you. Yeah, they, especially Frank Lampard senior, he knew everyone. He'd come up to you and he'd say hello, and he'd know a little bit about you. And it was, he knew like all the youth players. He was brilliant.
But that must have been very competitive because they produced a lot of lads at the time. Rio Fornan and Michael Carrick and all them lads were, I came through their academy.
They were a couple of years older than me. You had year below me was Kieran Richardson.
Oh, yeah.
Played for Man United. He was actually there as well. Glenn Johnson was there. So, like, you'd train together sometimes, but you had then Jermaine Defoe was there.
Yeah.
We had. In my age group, Jermaine came later, just before I left, a little while after he was there. I realised he was better than me, so I got out of there. But
he was in a forward position as well, though.
he was exceptional. We used to play against each other.
At a young age?
Yeah. He was probably at 9, 10, 11, he was exactly the same as he was as a senior player. Like, he just scored goals for fun.
It's amazing how you can identify him so young, like that, that they're going to excel. So, like, what happened then? Did you move on from West Ham? Like, how does that work as you go through the years?
So, it was getting to a point where I was at schoolboys at West Ham, and then it goes towards YTS, which is the youth system scheme.
It's like an apprenticeship kind of YTS.
So, you'd go into like a 2-year YTS.
Yeah.
And at the time, like, you didn't really want to do a YTS because you wanted a pro contract. So clubs would offer you, say, a 6-month YTS and you go on to a pro when you turn 16, or some players would only ever get a YTS over a 2-year period. And I had a few offers. Like I had like Aston Villa, I could have gone to, a bit, it would have been living in Birmingham. I had an opportunity at Liverpool. Millwall was always around the corner looking, and QPR came and offered me the best deal, and they offered me a 6-month YTS, and then I was going on to a 3-year pro contract.
Whoa.
So at 16, so I was like, I'm going to do that. Like we grew up, and as a kid where we grew up, you didn't get them sort of opportunities and to go on to earning decent money from the age of 16 onwards was good. So you couldn't really turn them sort of things down, you know. So I ended up doing that. So like at YTS level, you were getting £46 a week.
Yeah.
And then you go from that to like, it was, I think, my first contract, I was getting £125 a week.
That's still like three times, like,
So I ended up then doing that. Still had to do the jobs.
Yeah.
Like, still cleaning boots and sweeping stadiums and going on the match day bus and having to do all the first team players' food and picking up their laundry after training and games. And look, it was tough. And I think, like, it did set you out to go, like, I don't want to do this. I want to be where they are. And, like, I mean, my first job was doing the laundry, so I used to have to wait for the first team players to finish training. I used to get the trip. Yes, I had to get the laundry from training ground to Loftus Road.
Yeah.
Then get it back to the training ground, and then you have to be in early the next morning to put all the kit out for the first team players. Like, so, like, your days were long. Like, you'd get in at 8 o'clock, and I used to travel 2 hours on the train.
Great learning curve though, in many ways. Kind of hard, you know, they're kind of toughening you up a bit, it's resilience and stuff, is it?
Oh yeah, especially like in the first team you had, then you had like Danny Maddox and Neil Ruddock come on loan, had Vinnie Jones there, you had...
What tough lads.
Like. Yeah, and they'd just leave their training kit everywhere because they'd think it's funny. Right. Like, to them it was banter. Yeah. To us you'd be like, I could go and get that now.
Yeah.
Like, Vinnie used to leave his boots at the other end of the training pitch, which was like, you'd have to take them off at training just to make you go over and walk over and get them. Because that's what they would had to be done to them when they were playing. So they used to like do it back to, or he'd soak in wet his boots in the shower and the next morning they'd have to be dry. So like you'd be there with a hairdryer like trying to dry his boots and things like that.
And what was he like to the young players? Because he was just this hard man like on the pitch like, but it seemed a bit of a messer as well.
He was very fair, fair. Like he was, like you didn't want to get any of his stuff wrong because he would literally go after you. But if you looked after, if you've done the right things, he was always like, so like Christmas time, the YSS, you'd always get a bonus off the first team players.
Yeah.
And then you'd have to do sometimes, if they thought you were as rubbish at your job, you'd have to do something to get to like sing a song or do something. But if you were good, he would just go, Jen, up, there's your money gone. And like, he was fine. And he, to be fair, like I had Gavin Peacock as well. I used to do Gavin Peacock and Danny Maddox's boots.
Yeah.
And Gavin used to look after me, to be fair. And I've still stayed friends with Gavin even to now. So when I had made it into the first team at QPR, Gavin was there. And we lived near each other.
He was one of the star players at the time. Like.
Yeah, he was brilliant footballer.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And he was so good to like educate you and teach you. And I used to drive in with him because he used to live near me.
Yeah.
So like, I had a little Peugeot 206 and he had like a Jaguar XKR and used to take it in turns driving in and like... If he got injured in training, I used to be buzzing because I'd get to drive his car home because he wouldn't want to drive it because he'd got an injury. So.
And for a young player, like that's the kind of the buzz about being around the older lads and stuff like that. It must be brilliant. Like,
oh, yeah, you know? It's unbelievable. Like the experiences you get. I don't know whether it's like that anymore.
Yeah.
But like it was, look, you got taught the things not to do.
Yeah.
And you also got rewarded for when you've done things right. And look, it was a hard lesson when I made it into the first team. There was a lot of big name players in there and you know you couldn't, I don't think a young kid could go into that environment now and be able to handle that.
Yeah, a very different type of, I'd imagine, environment. They seemed like a lot more, without kind of putting down the lads that played today, but a lot kind of more like mannish kind of like maybe a lot of toxic masculinity going on as well, I'd imagine. Was there around that time like they'd kind of nearly be bullying some of the young players?
Yeah, I think it probably was borderline at times. I think that you had to grow up. You had to learn how to handle things and you had to take... And people didn't care how old you was, whether you were 16 or 32, like you got treated the same way. So, you know, if you didn't do something quite right on the pitch or you weren't quite right in training or you were acting the idiot off the pitch, you were told. And, you got reprimanded for that. And there was times where it was hard lessons and tough lessons. And look, I think when I made it into the first team, you had, like, Gavin Peacock, Kevin Gallen, Mark Bertram... like they were three players who were like high profile players.
Yeah.
And you had Paul Furlong, centre forward.
Yeah.
Who played quite a lot of games in, you know, Championship and some first team. And then we had some other good players come in, but like they didn't care how old you was. Like they were like, no, you're up here now. Like, and I was 17 and, you know, you had to go out with the first team. You had to go and do the things they did and you had to, they were harsh on you, but I think probably set me up and I was probably, my background and where I grew up, I could deal with things,
Yeah. Because you would have probably played on the road with a couple of lads older than you as well, like street football and stuff, would you?
Yeah, with the estate I grew up in was the Rennie Estate and right next to Millwall's Ground and we had a cage and it didn't matter what age it was, everyone played in it. Whether you were like 9 or 16, everyone was playing together and it used to come home like rips all over you playing on concrete and you'd get battered and...
Yeah.
People didn't care like about your age, and if you're going to play with the big boys, you've got to be able to handle it. So
that kind of helps. So when you're playing with kind of first team football and training and stuff like that, like guys that are much bigger than you and kind of more experienced.
Yeah, I think I was reading a quote on I think it was a Johan Cruyff quote the other day, and he was talking about like playing street football for smaller people. Like I'm taller than Liam Kearney, but still a bit shorter, right? But the street football for smaller people is like it helps you. You learn how to use your body, learn how to when to fall, how to keep balance. And it was a quote. He was saying that they were doing that a lot in the academy at Barcelona for the smaller players like the Xavis and people like that because they learned how to use their body and how to manipulate things. And I think like that probably helped me a little bit.
So, like, did you get a game, the QPR's first team, or?
Yes, I made my debut about a week after my 18th birthday.
Yeah.
So we played a friendly game against Watford. Mm. And is it Neil Cox who used to play right back for Watford? He was playing in a friendly game. And I went past him, pushed it past him and started laughing. And because he was an old and experienced player and he was trying to kick me the whole game.
Yeah.
And as I crossed it, we nearly scored anyway. And Ray Wilkins was standing on the sideline and Ian Holloway was the manager.
Yeah.
And Jerry Francis was there. He was kind of like a head of football at the time.
Yeah.
And Ray Wilkins said something to me on the sideline and I answered him back. But like he was with Watford at the time. And he turned around and said to Ian Holloway, you need to send him down into the conference, get the shit kicked out of him a little bit. That's what the words he used. And the next week I went on loan to Hampton and Richmond. So I went down there and I'd done really well, like really well. And I came back from being on loan down there and I was first week back training and the club had kind of gone into administration. And they just turned around and said to me, oh, you're starting next weekend. And like, I was then literally back in, so I think it was Chesterfield away, first game in a season. So yeah, so like not long after my 18th birthday, I was into the first team.
Into the first team. And how long did you stay with them?
So I stayed up until I was 20. I'd done really well my first year. I got Young Player of the Year. Done really well. My contract was up into that season.
Yeah.
And went to negotiate my new contract. And I had an agent at the time. I ain't going to mention his name, but when we were going through with a deal and trying to do the deal, it just wasn't good.
Yeah.
It wasn't like I expected to be a better deal getting Young Player. It was the same kind of contract and nothing really improved. And not long into that, found out that he was the same agent as the manager.
Oh.
So we kind of had a bit of a falling out and I don't think that helped me the rest of that year. I think that I probably didn't do the right things either. I was too involved with the older lads in the team and kind of doing the things I probably shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
And Holloway, I had an opportunity to go to Crystal Palace and I'd said it to Ian Holloway and he was like, we can't go anywhere now anyway because you're under contract and stuff like that. So I stayed until the end of the season there and done just because I only got a year's extension on my contract and I left then. I tried to go and get a few different clubs and trialled around at places. Nothing kind of really worked out. I found out later on that clubs were reaching out to QPR to get my contact details. They wasn't getting passed on. But it wasn't
a bit of politics behind the scenes.
Yeah, I think there was some stuff. And look, you know, Tim Breaker actually rang me. He was the assistant manager of the reserves at the time. And he rang me and he said, look, there's a couple of clubs that have been ringing you. I'll pass on the details.
Yeah.
And I ended up going to Swindon. Because the chief executive at QPR at the time went to Swindon and he rang me and asked me to come down. So he more or less signed me. But then they had a transfer embargo put on them. So I'd signed a contract that I couldn't actually kind of fulfil.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think Andy King, the actual manager at the time, was the one wanting to sign me.
Yeah.
So I ended up being there doing all the pre-season and then they just said to me during pre-season that the transfer embargo ain't going to be lifted. So like what we're offering you, we can't actually give you. So end up going back down. Chris Kinnear was my manager at Margate.
Yeah.
And he had known me from my like schoolboy days and stuff like that. So he rang me and asked me to come down and play there. So end up going down and playing in the conference for Margate for a while just to get playing. I was working in part time and
was that a blow to the confidence then at that stage as well? So you're going from playing first team for QPR, dropping down a couple of divisions and you have to go back working part time, like does that a dent?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, look, for me, I probably made a few bad choices as well.
Yeah.
Laurie Sanchez at Wickham wanted me and wanted me to sign. But I went to Swindon for the extra money.
Okay, yeah.
And
instead
I could
of playing
have stayed
for a team
there.
Above them, like, yeah.
I could have probably stayed at Wickham, done well, got opportunities from there. Yeah. But I wanted a couple of my friends at Swindon, so I wanted to go there and I liked the club.
Yeah.
So I made a bad choice there. And then I ended up, then they couldn't sign me once I said to him, he was like, look, you go Swindon, the deal ain't here for you anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
So I ended up then at Margate and I knew, look, if I got my head down and done the right things, I'd be fine. I'd went around on trial at a few clubs, done quite well, but it was coming down to the finances really. So I didn't kind of get the breaks I was hoping to get. And I stayed at Margate and then I think my dad reached out to Pat Dolan.
Yeah.
And then I played for Margate on a Saturday. I flew to Cork Saturday after the game. Played for Cork against Kilkenny on the Sunday.
Was it like a friendly or something?
We played a pre-season friendly. It was only a week before the season started, so we played Kilkenny in a friendly. I done really well. I scored. I actually played centre midfield in that game.
Yeah.
And then Dolan stuck me back, left back. Then I ended up coming. I didn't go back. He went to me, look, we want you to stay. Can you stay? And we want you for the start of the season. Then I think it was Dublin City, first game of the season then.
That's crazy, like. So all of a sudden you're thrown into the League of Ireland within a matter of a few weeks, and that was it then, kind of, for a few years. Like, I mean, he had success under Dolan. We spoke to Liam about it, and I suppose then Dolan was gone, and then Damien came in and took over the team, and he won the league the year after.
Mm. Yeah, Dolan was good to me in terms of kind of sorting my life out.
Okay.
So, like, he was very strict with me.
Was it good to get away from the UK environment and some of the lads over there and kind of settle down over here instead, away from it all? Or?
Yeah, like, when I come here, I think it's completely different. Like, yeah. When I come here, like, you were treated like royalty when you come here, and it wasn't the same as, like, being in England. And probably when I first come here, I was probably too much. I was probably
by about the tone and stuff.
Yeah. And
I know a few of you used to go out and you know you get the VIP room in Rearns and stuff at the time, or the Savannah Browns and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, so I would have been probably a little bit too much into that.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
Pat kind of got his arm around me and sorted myself out a little bit. And then like Damien come in and he was just like, handcuffs off, go and get forward, go and do what you want, go and enjoy it. And he was very different for me, Damien. Damien was good. Like Pat kind of had the structure in place, right? Mm-hmm. And then Damien kind of left it play and kind of took the handcuffs off a lot of players. And I think you had that little bit more freedom. But I think Pat put a lot of structures in place in the team that allowed Damien to come and say, listen, you can all play, you understand what you're doing.
Bad cop kind of scenario. Yeah.
And I think it just worked out perfect how that happened, because when Damien come in, he was able to do it. And I think then we did kick on and we did start to win games. And obviously we had like Roy come back in then with Damien, and Roy was a great addition. I don't think people talk about him enough in terms of when he come in and what he added to the team, like his pace and his aggressiveness. Like,
he was a fast player, like, wasn't he? Yeah.
But he was fearless. Like, he didn't like anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't like anyone. It's very different now, because I think I talk about a lot with the girls is we didn't like anybody outside of Cork. Like, we got through the Jack Lynch Tunnel and everyone was from Cork. We didn't want to know anyone. We didn't have mates of other teams. Yeah. Everyone was, like, it was us against everyone.
Yeah.
I think it's really changed, like, in football now. Everyone's friends with everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Roy Keane often talks about that as well, doesn't he? And Sky and stuff, how everyone is too friendly nowadays, whereas there was that kind of rivalry, wasn't there?
Yeah, like, I remember we played a game, I think it was the they done an all-Ireland team, like the best players in the league, and you played like Man City, Celtic.
Oh, yes, that's what was that for the opening in the Aviva or something like that?
I was in that. But then you had like Owen Heary and people like that in it, and like me and Owen hated each other.
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't talk to each other. Like, we'd argue on the pitch, fight.
Yeah.
And then you go and play in that, and you then become friends with people. I wouldn't say friends, but you like
get to know,
like, get to know people a little bit more. And look, and then you end up, it changes a little bit, I think, but it didn't kind of change my perspective of how I was going to go out and play games. It was just, I can see how it has gone that way, because there is a lot of people, a lot of friends in football.
But back around then you had great European runs and all that. So, like, that's an opportunity that you wouldn't have had if you had stayed in the lower leagues in the UK.
No, I would have never had that, never. And I think that I didn't know enough about the League of Ireland when I was playing there, and in England, sorry. And then when I come here and got the opportunity, you're like, wow, like, I didn't realise it was going to be like this. And I never wanted to leave at Cork after that. And look, I know I left a couple of times and come back.
Yeah. The first time you went to Motherwell, was it?
I did. I went to Motherwell, so.
Was it that your contract was up, or did you get?
My contract was up at the end of the season, and I think it was at the stage where Brian was leaving and new ownership was potentially coming in.
Between Brian Lennox and Arcadia, that time. Yeah.
And I left because I still had been offered a deal when it was only a couple of months left in the season.
Yeah.
Motherwell had been on to me, and I had actually Nottingham Forest wanted me to come there and have a look at me on trial as well. But Motherwell offered me a deal, like, well, straight away, a two deal. And I was like, I get gang of play against Celtic and Rangers. Like, that'd be like, as a kid growing up, we used to watch all this. My dad used to have us whenever the game was on, Celtic Rangers game, we'd sit down and watch it. And I remember as kids, like me and my brother had Celtic kits, and everyone else on the estate had an England kit and or a Rangers kit. We had like Celtic kits or Ireland kits. So it was an opportunity to go and do that and play against them. And I was like, I'm not going to turn that down.
Big stadiums and stuff.
Yeah, it was great. My first year at Mudwell was really good. Mm. My second year was not so good. I got injured towards the end of the season. It was like the second to last game of the season. Then the manager got the sack. A new manager come in, Mark McGee come in as the manager. Mm. And before we'd even come back in pre-season, like, he'd taken the number three squad number off me, and I was 16. Didn't really play.
Knowledge, your number's up, didn't it, at that stage? Yeah.
Didn't really play much in pre-season. And it's very mad. Like I said, now my dad, because like, where you're a manager now and you have players whose parents are onto you.
Yeah.
And players,
yeah.
Are, you know, some players are coming to you because their parents are telling them to come. My dad was onto me, go and speak to him, go and speak to him. And I was like, I want to wait and see if I get any game time before I go and have that conversation with him.
Yeah.
And it got to like a week before the season started, and I just went and had the conversation with him, and he was like, look, I'm looking for someone taller. And I'm like, well, look, I'm 27 years of age. I'm not going to get any taller than what I am. So, I'm not going to play. And he was like,
silly commentary.
But like, he said, look, I still think you're going to play some. And he kept bringing me on in centre midfield as a holding midfielder. And I kept coming on games, and I just weren't enjoying not playing. And I was living in Scotland on my own. There was no one else around me, really. And I say it to a lot of players now, is like, when you go somewhere, make sure it's the right club and right environment, because you go somewhere like I did, it's lonely when you're there on your own and you don't, you got no friends around you. I was having my mates like come up every weekend just to have people to come up. And
you didn't gel with the players that were there, no?
It was an older crowd.
Yeah.
And a lot of them kind of had families and didn't really all kind of do stuff together. Now, Phil O'Donnell, who actually passed away, he was brilliant, amazing. Like, he lived near me, he used to pick me up, used to take me to do stuff, and then we had Richie Foran, who was there as well. So me and Richie were close, then Richie left. So like, I had some people around me, but it wasn't, when they had gone, I felt lonely a bit. But you end up kind of, you overthink about things so much when you're on your own. And I think when you're around your friends and people like that, it takes your mind off stuff a little bit. So I did think, I found that hard my second year there. And because I wasn't playing, it was even harder.
And people forget about that with footballers in general, that, you know, when you move clubs a lot, you are on your own when you move into a new club. You're trying to get involved, and there could be a bit of a click there already when they're like, and that's difficult.
You get so much downtime.
Yeah.
I think like, you're training at that stage, we was probably training at 10 o'clock, was home by 2 o'clock every day. And like, what do you do for the rest of the day? Like, you can only go driving range for an hour or two. You can't go there for ages. And then like, you end up just getting out, walking around shopping centres and finding things to do. And it's boring. You're bored, and there's only, you know, so like, there is so much downtime. And I think that's why players do probably go the wrong way and do the wrong things, because there's a huge amount of downtime. But I was lucky that Stephen Kenny went to Dunfermline.
Oh, yeah.
I rang Stephen and I was like, look, I want to play. I need to get out on loan.
Yeah.
Can you put a request in? Would you take me on loan? He said, I'd love to, when I already have, but they keep denying it. So I went in to Mark McGee and I was like, look, I want to play.
Yeah.
I need to play. Let me go out on loan. No. Like, we need to keep you. We've got a few injuries. Went another couple of weeks. It was a week before the January transfer window. And I just said to him, look, you need to let me go out on loan. Like, please let me go. Stephen's going to take me. He's willing to pay my wages. Let me go on loan. And he was like, right, go on. I think he just had enough of me asking.
Yeah.
And then I went on loan to Dunfermline, done really well, and came back to Motherwell. And I was actually going to, before I came back in the January transfer window, and we were meant to play against Celtic.
Yeah.
And I came back in, he said, look, you're starting this weekend, like, against Celtic. Oh. So I was like, buzzing, like, thinking this is my opportunity.
The jersey when you're a kid and all that.
Yeah. Like, thinking this is my opportunity now to show him I'm good enough to be here and I can play. And game got called off, got abandoned. And then the next week I didn't play. And then I think Liam Carney rang me and he was like, would you come back to Colt? And I was like, yeah, get Alan Matthews to ring me and have a conversation. I said, the problem is, like, the money I'm on here is like quite high. I said, it'd have to make sense for me to come back. And then when Alan rang me and what he offered with Arcadia, is it?
Yeah, that's right.
They offered me a deal, and I was like, went straight into my war and said, look, could tear up the rest of my contract, I'm happy to, I want to leave.
Want to go back, yeah.
And they didn't do it at the start, and then I had to go back and a little bit of negotiations with them to get that torn up and get a little bit of a payout off them to come back. Then I left and tore up my contract, come back to Cork and came back with Alan Matthews, and then that lasted all of about six weeks.
It was a fierce excitement at the time because I was involved in the club. I was saying with Liam, but it was like, yeah, Arcadia did have the checkbook out. Yeah. They were kind of, they went after George O'Callaghan, brought him back from England. They brought you back. You know, they were bringing all the kind of 2005 team back and then adding extra players on top of it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, when I talk about this, a lot of people is like, do you know when a club rings you and offers you something, you never sit down and say to them, well, can you afford to do that?
Yes.
Like, and probably like looking at things now, it was really unrealistic what they were offering people.
It was Celtic Tiger kind of stuff. Yeah.
And you just kind of felt, well, like, they can afford to do that. I 100% want to be back at Cork anyway.
Yeah.
But like, that's even better.
Yeah.
Like, to have that.
And the crowds were smaller than what they are now, which is kind of, you know, if you think about it, you know, we were delighted to get 4,000 at the Cross.
Yeah.
You know, so it's,
it's mad. It was mad because you never thought about things like that. And now you look at it and you go, never knew that was going to happen. Like, I wish it didn't. Like, I wish I wasn't in that situation that we
were
in.
And the team was flying up until halfway in the season when it all came and crashing down.
We were good. We were good. Yeah. Like Dan Murray, like, I think like the word legend gets thrown around a lot in football, doesn't it? I think, but probably Dan Murray was like epitome of the football club. Like, everything was like, and he was just so good. And organising around him, players we had, and it was just a tough time. And I think even at that time when we're going through what we were going through in terms of wages, I don't think we got paid for like 12 weeks.
That's right, yeah.
And Dan never, what do you call it, kept going on about it. He kept like pushing things forward, kept the team together, like kept it going. So like, it was really interesting from...
And you went on to win the Setanta Cup, which was like every other team would have collapsed. But actually, it nearly made you stronger for the fellas that were left, because a lot of players left that time because they were trying to clear the books. The examiner came in, and before the transfer window was over, there was a few lads went.
We were a small bit arrogant as a team. Like, we always felt we could win every game.
Yeah.
We never went into a game like worrying about who we were playing against. We was all like, not like, we're going to, you know, we're the best players. And it's funny that you mentioned that game, actually, because we were talking about something the other day, and I think it was Liam put a bad cross that I put in that semi-final. I tried to cross to the far post, it went miles out. I was like to him, well, you didn't put in the cross I put in for Dan Murray's goal though, did you? You put that longest one that I kicked into the shed end nearly. So like we're all still close as well.
Yeah.
And we were very close then.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of you have ended up as kind of coaches and stuff like that with the team. So it was interesting. Like, so you went to Shamrock Rovers for a bit then.
No, I don't know about that.
2010. Now, right, yourself and Dan Moore, you were together up there, weren't?
Yeah, Dan didn't want to go on his own and made me come with him, so, no.
Keep the team together.
Yeah, no, my partner just had a baby at the time.
Yeah.
And I didn't really want to go anywhere. Like, the City was always my club. Like, I didn't want to go and sign for Shamrock Rovers was never.
Yeah, never on
cars. Nah, never. And Michael O'Neill had rang me quite a lot.
Yeah.
And he'd put quite a few offers to me, and it was like, listen, this is the last chance now.
Yeah.
It's the last offer.
He was building his own bit of a dream team above, kind of, like, wasn't he?
Yeah. And I went in to see Roddy Collins, and look, it was just never going to change.
Yeah.
So I just said to him, look, nothing's changed. It's been like 14 weeks now.
Yeah.
I need to make a decision. Like, so I just said to him, look, I went and see him on the morning. I think it was a Monday morning. I said to him, like, look, I'm going to sign for Shamrock Rovers tomorrow.
Yeah.
I said, like, I have to. I said, I can't afford to.
Yeah.
Stay around and wait. No one knows what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, you're telling us this is going to happen, this is not going to happen. And
yeah.
End up going and signing for Shamrock Rovers then. And yeah, it was.
You won a league.
Yeah.
But did you ever run in Europe, or was that after you?
We did. We played Juventus in Europe.
Yeah.
So yeah, we had. It was.
What was that like?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. Like, because as a kid, like, Del Piero was your hero. Like, I remember watching, we had like Ravanelli, Vialli.
Yeah.
Like, I used to think, oh, I love Juventus. Like, Juventus would have been my Italian team. So, like, when we got the opportunity to play against them, and then Del Piero comes on and scores a free kick from like 45 yards out.
You're probably watching like, nearly as a spectator.
Yeah. And it's like clapping. It was unbelievable. Like, just seeing it going over your head, and you're like, what, that's definitely going in. And like, it was just class. Like, just to have that experience of doing that.
Yeah.
Like, we played in Israel, beat an Israeli team. And, like, was it in Israel, I think? I can't remember now, but we just done really well. Like, we was a decent Shamrock Rovers team. Don't think any team would have ever beat our league winning side at Cork.
Yeah.
So at Cork City. So I think that would have, we were good. Like, Gary Twigg could just do nothing in a game and score.
And
it was interesting going to Rovers, because when I first went there, I don't think any of the players spoke to me.
Oh, so that rivalry was still there, like,
We played Bowes. I went 2 weeks before the season started. And we played Bowes at home, first game of the season.
Yeah.
And I just remember 50-50 of Killian Brennan and just absolutely, like, trying to take him out.
Yeah.
And it just, everyone in after that, I think I cleared one off the line in the game. And after that, then everyone was like my friend. It was like, we always just used to think you was a prick.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? How did they have a perception of you then? Like, yeah.
Yeah, I've said it to a lot of people. Like, I didn't want to be anyone's friend. Like, I went into games saying,
you're quite an aggressive player too, though. Like, and probably they saw then that you had a hatred towards them. You're in your own zone.
Yeah, look, I think for me growing up, I always used to think, like, there's a lot of players technically better than me.
Yeah.
So I have to be different. So, like, I have to be more aggressive. I have to make your life a living hell when you play against me. So, I said, look, I'd go into games thinking, look, I don't care if I play well.
Yeah.
But I'm going to make sure whoever I play against has the worst day of their life. Like, I'm going to grab ya, pinch ya, pull ya, step on your toes, like, come through you late, make sure that you know that you're coming off the game thinking, I don't want to play against him again.
Yeah.
Not because I was a good player, but because they knew that it was a horrible day for him to come play against me. And that was kind of my mentality of going into things. But I think, as I probably couldn't got away with now in football, the things I got away with then.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know how you'd adapt to things now and how you'd do it differently, because that was a big makeup of my game, like, and how I played.
You came back to City for a while then, as they were kind of on the way back, I suppose, in many ways. It was a different team, though, I'd say. A lot of different players. All the lads that you kind of played with were kind of gone at that stage, were they?
Yeah, so I had a year left at Rovers on my contract.
Yeah.
And I met Tommy Dunn in Barry's in Douglas.
Yeah.
There's a little bit for Barry's in Douglas there, look. But I met him in Barry's in Douglas, and we was having a pint. He said, would you come back? I said, I'd love to come back.
Yeah.
I said, but, like, what's the club's ambitions? Get out of the first division. I said, I don't really want to come back and stay in the first division for the next 3-4 years. I said, he went, no, like, we're going to get up this year.
Mm.
And then the following night, I met with him and a couple of board members, again in Barry's, and we sat down and we spoke about a deal. And then I rang Michael O'Neill and I just said, look, I want to move back to Cork. I'm travelling up and down from to Dublin.
Mm.
I was, between me and Dan Murray, we were travelling up on a Monday, training Monday night, staying Monday night, training Tuesday, coming back down a Tuesday, go back up Thursday, stay Thursday night, back, play the game Friday. And we both had kids at the time, just had kids.
So you wanted to be in Cork, Luke,
yeah, so I wanted to be back home and back at City. And that was the biggest thing for me. And Michael was fine with it. He was like, look, I completely understand. And, you know, he allowed me to come back. And they had Ender Stevens at the time, so they had a replacement for me anyway.
Yeah.
And then I come back to Cork City and I was like, right, ready to go again.
And then all of a sudden, was it 2014 you went off to the States, did you?
Yeah, so I took over, I finished playing at City. I took over as, like, player manager at Blarney.
Yeah.
And done really well, actually, in the first season. We finished second.
In the Manchester City League?
Yeah, we should have really got promoted from, because we was in the second division. We should have really got promoted. We had plenty of opportunities to win the league. And we played Mayfield away last game of the season. We only needed a point, but we had, like, three of our players got suspended and I was one of them for the last game. And we ended up losing the game. So we didn't end up going up. And but, like, then the next following season, it was kind of, I didn't know if I wanted to stay doing that. And then I met someone in the airport in London who actually had worked over in America and was like, would you go out there and coach? I was like, to be honest with you, I said, it's so difficult to get out there. I said, it's a pain. Like, I went, and he went, no, a friend of mine's got a company. I'll get him to ring you. And he rang me that night and had a visa and everything like that ready to go. And I rang Liam up. I said, look, do you want to fancy going to America, go coaching?
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, coming in. So the two of us went off and done that. I mean, I'd separated from my child's mum at the time.
Yeah, okay.
So she had met someone else and she was moving to Manchester anyway.
Okay.
So I didn't really want to stay in Cork if they were going to be there and I was going to be.
Yeah.
So, look, tough decision leaving the kid at that age.
Yeah. Big decision.
Yeah, but we felt, I mean, his mum spoke about it and was like, look, he's young enough to not know any different.
Yeah.
And like he'd be over and backwards and forwards and we'd try and get him. So it's just, Shay loved it because he'd be coming over to America for 5-6 weeks and
brilliant. Yeah.
4 weeks. Then I'd want to get rid of him because he'd drive me mad. But like, he'd love it because he's,
yeah,
you know, he got them opportunities that a lot of other kids probably don't ever get to have the opportunity to do. So.
And what part of the state was it?
So I started off in North Carolina.
Yeah.
So I was in Raleigh at the start. And then I'd travel around the states kind of doing some coaching the coaches and.
Yeah.
Like take camps and stuff. So part of my first role, I'd work with Global Image Sport.
Yeah.
And I'd travel all over the states, kind of going into clubs. And like, so I'd probably done about 12 different states in my first year. And then I was doing a seminar in South Carolina. And there was a club in South Carolina called CESA. And I ended up seeing that they had a job opportunity and I'd applied for the job. Yeah. Got speaking to the two people who own the club. And one of the owners, Piers Tormey, is mates with Brian Kerr.
Oh, yeah.
So he texts Brian Kerr and said to him, Danny Murphy, ?" And he went, give the little shit a job. And that's what he showed me the message and that's what he'd said back to him. So they offered me the job. I ended up going to Carolina Elite Soccer Academy and I was there for about 3.5 years. Yeah, so I loved it.
Great experience, it's
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable experience. I mean, from a coaching point of view, it's coach's dream.
Yeah.
Unbelievable pitches, facilities, the way you're looked after.
Yeah.
Like you're seen as like gods to the players and it's such a different mentality
it's
towards
a growing
coach.
Sport over there too, isn't it?
Yeah, and expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, and expensive. Like you'd have two seasons in the year, you'd have the spring and the fall season and you're looking at like €1,500-1,600 per season. Oh. So, but you look at it and I was chatting to a parent yesterday at our junior academy and I was saying like it's completely different though because it's a professional, they see coaches as professionals over there. So
yeah,
you pay this amount of money to get professional coaching.
It's not volunteers like over here.
It's not. So parents understand they're paying that sort of money and they're getting someone who's got a UEFA B license who's coaching kids at 9, 10, 11 years of age. Like I'd had three teams. So you'd have three teams. So I'd have like a 9s, 10s, and then I'd take like 16s or 14s team and you'd have games all weekend. So you'd have three sessions.
Yeah.
They train 2-3 nights a week, depending on the level of league they're in. So you'd have sessions every night of the week. So you'd have back-to-back sessions. And then you'd have your weekends would be, like my nines and tens would play. It's good the way they structure it. So, for instance, my nines and tens would have games on the same day.
Yeah.
But one after the other. So whatever venue you went to, you'd play, the other team would have the same. So we'd play in the morning the nines, afternoon it'd be the tens, and then the Sunday I'd have the 14s, say. So you'd be in the same place. You weren't travelling all over the place to go in, which is obviously in America's the travel's the biggest thing of it. So like I'd be say in Atlanta or Florida and you'd be there Saturday, you'd have two games of Saturday, then you'd stay that night and then you'd have the next day. But like everything was taken care of, like because the fees that parents pay covers everything the coaches need and their wages on top of it.
Kind of elite sport over there, so in many ways, is it? Like it wouldn't be the working class kids getting to play football. It's kind of
I think the club I was at would be probably one of the top clubs in the country.
Yeah.
But they would have like a kind of a fund put together for them the not so privileged kids who were still had the ability.
That were handy at playing
If there were kids that couldn't afford it, they'd have to show their taxes as parents.
Yeah.
To be able to get the funding to be able to support the player through it. So as much as people go, oh, like the money's thrown here and it's an elite level sport, there's still kids playing that can't afford
it.
And a lot of the clubs look after them in that way.
Yeah. Why did you come back? Like, you went to the UK first, did you?
Yeah, so my little boy was going to secondary school.
Okay.
So I decided, look, I need to probably be around Shay a little bit more. So I decided to come back and then lockdown happened. But a couple of weeks after I come back, so I didn't bring COVID back with me anyway, put it that way. So I came back and Shay was going into school and just wanted to be around him a little bit more often, like being, so I moved back with my parents in London.
So you went to London, yeah.
Yeah, so I went back to London, and then I kind of got into coaching in an academy in London called Rondos Academy.
Yeah.
Really good soccer academy, like the technical proficiencies that they teach kids at a young age is unbelievable. And then they were kind of involved with Welling United.
Yeah.
So Rondos would be like an academy and Welling would be the club.
Okay, so the progress, yeah.
You'd have the kids, a lot of the best kids from Rondos would go into Welling.
Yeah.
And they'd bring them through the Welling Academy then hopefully to the elite level and get picked up by pro clubs. And I went in and done some coaching at Welling and I just asked, like, why have you not got a girl set up? And they said, oh, no, we have a team. And we went and looked at the team and it was a mix of four different age groups.
Yeah.
And I just decided that I'll take it all over the girl side.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was doing in America. I was doing female side of the game.
Yeah.
I said, I'll take it over. I said, but I'm disbanding that whole team. I said, like, we'll have an under nines, we'll have a tens, we'll have a twelves and a fourteens. And we set up four teams, and over the lockdown period, we, myself and a girl, Vicky Ball, we decided we'd just get loads of Facebook ads out. So we literally blasted Facebook ads, got so many kids turn up.
Yeah.
And we ended up with four teams, full with players. And then lockdown happened. And then we carried on promoting it, trying to get out. And by the time lockdown had finished, we had a team in every age group from under nines all the way up to 16s. Oh. And a senior women's team. So we actually set up the senior women's team. We started in the lowest division. We won that league by, I told the league, if you put us in this, we're going to batter everyone. And we won the league with like six games left to go. And they pushed us up two divisions up the pyramid.
Yeah.
So we went into that next league, done really well, got towards the end of that. And then lockdown happened again. And then we kind of, we stayed in that division, but we had some really good cup runs. We nearly got through to the first round qualifier, the FA Cup.
Yeah.
And yeah, so then I was doing that. And then I'd spent a lot of time finding money to, like, I wasn't just kind of, I was academy manager and a senior women's manager, but I was also trying to find funding and sponsorship for all the teams.
Doing a bit of commercial as well.
Yeah, so I was doing all of that as well. And I, we was in a good place, like, and the people who owned the club at the time at Welling wanted funding for the senior men's team. And we just kind of had a falling out over where money should go and what should be done and why I felt that if things should be done a certain way. And I got the sack and an opportunity
came up. So even though you created all this, you know, all the different academies for the girls' game over, that didn't work for them, like, so it wasn't on their agenda by the sounds of it.
No, and I think, look, you've got, I think it, in the job role you're in, and even as a player, like, you're always going to be, you know, there's always a point where they have enough of you, or there's someone else coming to take your place who's going to be better, or hopefully better, or, you know, and I think you always have to understand that you're not going to be somewhere forever. Like, you've got to do the best you can in the period of time you're there. But you've also got to have your eyes in the back of your head that there's someone always looking to replace you and take your place. So I think, look, that's just football, isn't it? And that's just, like, you just have to live with that and you have to get on with it. And there's days when it's hard and you feel like that pressure, and there's days where you feel like everything's going your way and you have to try and stay level with it and try and be balanced. And you can't care what everyone thinks about you. So, like, for me, it's a case of that. It could have happened at any stage, but the circumstances that led to it at the time, I wasn't happy with. I felt things could have been done better. I kind of had a couple of opportunities around in England at the time. I was actually coaching. So I was managing Erith and Belvedere men's team, who played like the league, two leagues below the conference.
Okay.
So I was managing them on a Saturday and two nights during the week. I was coaching the academy girls on Saturday mornings. And then 2 days during the week, then I was doing the women's team two nights and we'd play on Sundays. So I was coaching quite a lot. I love it. Love coaching. And I enjoy being on the training pitch, trying to improve players, make them better. I'd done really well with Erith and Belvedere. And then I got the sack from there. I made some bad signings.
Yeah.
Bought players in who I thought could have helped us push on in the league. Didn't really happen. And comes to a point, my friend that was actually the owner, and we actually still speak now. And he said to me the other week, he's now left here at Belvedere. He said, I wish I'd never sacked Joe. He said, because the environment and what you created within the club has never been the same since. And he said, like, but look, people have to make, you have to make them things happen. Like,
it kind of comes part and parcel of football, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, you can't take it too personal, I'd imagine, can you? Because otherwise you'd be really low about it.
You never know what's going to happen. You never know whether they're going to need you again or whether you're ever going to need them again if they go and get, like, say, like AD, the owner of Belvedere, could end up taking over another club.
Yeah.
And he might turn and go, do you know what? I enjoyed my time with Danny. I'd actually bring him back in.
Yeah, yeah.
So, look, it's a results-driven business. If you ain't getting results, a lot of things will change and go that way. But, yeah, then he said the opportunity came up with a women's job at Colk.
Yeah, how did that happen?
It was a, I think it was an ad went out online.
Okay.
And actually, James Goodwin had texted me and said, the women's job is going to become available if you want to try and throw your name in for it.
Yeah.
And I texted Aina a year before.
Yeah.
And I said, look, if the women's job ever comes available, like,
give me a show.
Yeah. And he was like, no, we'll do, keep you in mind. And then when it become available again, I applied for it through the proper channels and I got the opportunity to have an interview. And then I had done my interview with the club and I probably had like a 30-page presentation for them and what I would do differently and how things I would change stuff. And look, a lot of what I kind of discussed in the interview with them I've done.
Mm.
It's still things we need to keep improving on. But yeah, no, I was buzzing to be back in Cork, to be honest with you. I have to put, like, just to be back in Cork City and just back living here again is just...
Yeah, and we're still kind of, in many ways, the early days of the women's team at the club.
Mm.
When you consider the history of the club, I know the club is 40 years this year, but the women's team is still relatively a new part of the overall mix. So I think it's exciting for that reason.
Yeah, it's really exciting. There's a lot of work gone into it.
Yeah.
Not just from myself and my staff, but like from the people in the back of the club and people probably don't get to see. Like, when I came in and you had the Forest ball with Decky and... Gare and everyone else who was involved.
Yeah.
Like, my main thing was, is like, the women's team has to be a part of the football club. It can't be separated and different kits and different stuff and they don't get this and they don't get that. And they said to me, no, look, what you want and what you want to do, we'll do it. And look, I probably was a pain at times because, like, if the men's got something, why have we not got it?
Yeah.
If we're doing this, why are we not getting what they're getting? So, like,
and that was after happening at international level with the team as well, where they wanted the same as the men's team and there was the strike and stuff like that, you know, at the time. So all that was kind of...
I think there was a culture in the club of, oh, it's us against them.
Yeah.
From the girls' side. And I think, I don't really know, but from conversations and from other people who have been involved in managing and taking the women's side, probably led that a little bit.
Yeah.
Whereas... I just said, I've been really open and honest with the girls and I've said, this is what it cost.
Yeah.
This is what we can afford to do.
Yeah.
And this is what we can't do.
Yeah.
So instead of turning around saying, we can't do it, no, this is why we can't do it. Like, the finance that we bring in from a footballing point of view is not enough from sponsorship or from people going to games. And like, we have to live within our means. Like, you can't go out spending hundreds of thousands of euros on a women's team that doesn't generate that money to come back, because if the club ever gets into financial difficulty, the first team they're going to cut is the women's team.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't bring the money in to support it.
Mm.
Like, we still run at probably a big loss to Dermot as it is.
Yeah.
But like, anything we've asked for or anything we want in terms of providing for the players, I've never had an issue with getting that.
But is it work in progress?
It is.
I mean, you know, you see in recent weeks there, like, where... you know, sellouts in the Emirates there for the, you know, Arsenal, and, you know, Chelsea get big crowds, you know, they're playing in the big stadiums. Will that happen here as well? You know what I mean? Where, you know...
It probably needs the support, without getting myself in trouble, from people like the FAI, probably needs to support it more.
Yeah.
Probably the government needs to get behind it more. Yeah. Not worry about when we're in a World Cup and everyone jumps on the bandwagon and everyone wants to be involved in it and they want to pitch with a team.
Yeah.
It's like, how do we keep growing the game in this country so that the clubs who are putting all the groundwork in and the hard work, and that goes from schoolgirl level as well, all the way up to like the senior level in the League of Ireland, is how do we all work together to keep promoting the game and keep trying to get bigger crowds at games, more girls out to games, more girls watching soccer. Mm. Like, there's a bigger job than just throwing money at things to do it. It's about promotion. It's about, if like Arsenal, the way they promote things from the female side of football is unbelievable.
Yeah. Like, take it serious.
Like, they had all female ground staff on Saturday. Like, the whole, if you look at the game, and I could be wrong, but like, looking at it, it looked like there was all female staff all around the side of the pitch.
Mm.
So, like, how are they getting all these females to come and watch games?
Yeah.
Even in the stands, you're looking at, there's women watching the games. Like, how do we in this country get more females going out to watch a soccer match? Like, they'd go and watch a GA match.
Yeah, so change that culture.
Yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing, and that's only going to improve the more success we have at international level.
Yeah.
But I think we've got to not just jump on the bandwagon when things happen. It's like, we've got to constantly be trying to promote it.
And we could probably learn from, I mean, if you think back, you know, Vera Pauw getting the team to the World Cup last year for the first time, that's similar to Jack Charlton getting the soccer team to the World Cup back in 1990. The big difference here is the League of Ireland was ignored after that, you know, whereas it could be seen as the driving force for the national team here, because we did have a few players within the team.
But I think if you look at the national team, they've all played in the League of Ireland buying one or two or maybe four at some stage in their career.
Which is brilliant.
So they've all come through either schoolgirl clubs within this country or they've played in League of Ireland at maybe a younger age but got somewhere and then ended up kicking on in their careers, going to England or going to other places, the US or places like that, like Denise, and being able to, but they had to start somewhere and they all started here.
So they're seeing the future stars within the League of Ireland in many ways. And your team, would it be young?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what's the average age?
Average age last year was like 18.2.
Whoa.
So we won't be miles off of that. I think a couple of our new signings may have brought the age group up a little bit, but we're probably being around 19, 20. Look, we have a young squad. My philosophy is that we've got to rely heavily on the academy.
Yeah.
We're never going to be a club that's going to be out going out spending fortunes on players, that we're going to have to promote and develop and bring players through the academy. Mm. Ideally, I'd love to have a club where it's like a best club, like similar to like Atletico Bilbao, where everyone is Cork based. They're all from Cork. They've all come through the academy. They're all playing first team football. But it's hard because if you bring all young girls through, they need some experience around with them to help them and guide them. So like the girls we've signed this year still have an affiliate. We've brought them in from elsewhere, but they have an affiliation to Cork City.
Okay.
So they have an affiliation to the county of Cork.
And who have you brought in?
So we've got Ola Oman, who's coming from Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah.
And her dad's actually from Cork and her nan lives in Cork. So she comes down, stays with her nan. She's going to be going to UCC. So I've told her now she can't tell anyone she's from Kildare. She's got anyone ask her you're from Cork, right? And then we signed Colleen as well. Colleen Kennedy the other day, well, about 2 weeks ago now. She's actually from America, but she's married someone from Cork.
Okay.
So her and her husband have moved back to Cork. So Colleen's in. So they've both got some sort of an affiliation to the county.
And did she play at a decent level in the States?
She did, and she played at a decent level over in Iceland, and she's played in Sweden. And like, just even, I think her experience alone of where she's played and how she talks and communicates with the players, you can see that the girls listen. And
that's,
I know
that's important.
Look, people have been crying out for ages for us to bring in experience, but for me, it's about having the right experience. Yeah. It's like, you can bring someone in who's played 500-600 league games in the League of Ireland, but how do they really help develop the younger girls? Whereas you look at Colleen and the way she talks and communicates with the younger girls, like, they listen, they're learning. So that's the sort of player we want. We don't want someone who's only coming in for her own personal benefit just to be here and do well herself. It's like, we need people who are going to all stick together as a team and all looking to go in the same direction. So we've been really fussy, probably, myself, with players we bring in.
Yeah.
And they've had to be the right players. And look, Ola Omani, for me, is an exceptional player. Like, I think she'll really kick on in her career.
And what position does she play?
She plays in midfield. She can play fullback. Mm. She can play any position in the middle. She's not the biggest. She's stocky. She's aggressive. She defensively very organised. Understands, reads the game really well.
Yeah.
Like, she's only 18 years of age. Like,
Whoa.
So.
Yeah.
Like, the potential for her is huge as well. And I mean, looking forward to working with her and helping her improve and develop. And
are a lot of the girls in college like Cork, like, you know, the way in UCC and stuff like that, yeah?
Yeah, so we'd have, so you've got Heidi, Niamh, still in school.
Yeah.
Niamh has another year at school. Alex is in college. Hannah Walsh is in college at UCC. You've got, if you look at a midfield, you've got Orla began UCC next year. Eva's still in UCC. Elia began, hopefully, UCC next year. She starts studying properly.
Yeah.
Then
two of them are leaving, so it's all.
Yeah, and then you've got like Kira Senna leaving, sir.
Yeah.
Sean has just finished at college. Laura Shine's still in college. Like, they're either just left or they're still at UCC. So I think we have like six now at UCC. And we probably will have another four, hopefully, going in next year.
And are they getting a scholarship then? Are they on a programme there?
So Eva's on the, Eva got the Quirkus Award.
Yeah.
Is that the right way of pronouncing
Quirkus,
it?
Yeah? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
So Eva got that award. But the rest of the girls would be on either, barring Aveen Donnelly is on a Cork City scholarship. Brilliant. I think Aveen's still on the UCC scholarship. So look, UCC have been brilliant to us, like helpful, like even small little things like, we do video on a Tuesday, but we use the Mardike gym on the Tuesday and just asking them, can we get facilities to do video? And like anything we've asked for, they've been so supportive, like in doing stuff, and like they want us in there. And the facilities that they have in terms of gym facilities is unbelievable. Yeah. Like, so like they're the small things that we've been able to provide for the girls that wasn't there in place before.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of asking questions. And if people say no, they say no, but like go and ask. Like,
so I know they don't have professional contracts, but in many ways what you're creating with a young team at 18, the average age, it's kind of like what they have in the States for the college.
Yeah.
Because they're going to university or they're still in school or whatever, but like you're giving them that education background, and it's, you know, who knows what's next then.
Yeah, I think you've got to be very careful with a women's game, because as much as you want to be professional, everyone to be professional, like it probably ain't the longest of careers.
Yeah.
Especially in the female game.
Yeah.
So like education's a big part
huge
of it.
Yeah.
And I think there's the next generation of girls all want to be professional footballers because they see it as a career now. But like, how can we set them up best so when they go potentially to go to England or someone like that, that they've got some sort of education behind them.
That if they get a setback,
then they've got something to fall back on. And I think like that's always the worry.
Yeah.
We want to develop them in the right way and give them the best opportunity to kick on in their careers, but we need to provide everything outside of the financial resources for them to live off, to give them everything they need. So like the girls train Tuesday gym, Wednesday on the pitch, Friday on the pitch, game Saturday, they do recovery Sunday mornings in the Mardike. So they're more or less full time anyway, in terms of the level of commitment myself and the staff ask of them. But we never have a problem. Like if we asked them to come an extra day because I'm opening an envelope or a letter, they'd be there. Like they want to be there, and they want to get better, and they want to keep trying to improve. And I think they all really care about the football club, and they really want the club to have success. And that's the reason why they put the time and effort in outside of a match day to try and help the club get to that.
And like with the new season about to begin this week, like how do you find, like what are your chances in terms of like, do you think you can challenge, or do you think you're a bit off that?
I don't think we're quite there to challenge at the top end of the table.
Yeah.
I think that we've still got room to develop and still things to improve on. I think that we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
I think that we're really developing as a team, and we look like a better team already. I think it's very difficult to say now before the season starts where you're at, because I think things change so much in the League of Ireland. Like teams, barring P-Man and probably Shells, not many teams play the same team every week.
Okay.
So like P-Man they've added one or two this year, so they'll be very similar to what it was last year.
Yeah.
Shells have made some good signings and they've got a new manager, so that could be different. So it's hard to say really where you're going to be at, but I think from where we're at in terms of as a group, we're miles ahead of where we was last year. So now we've got to now develop that into the league and into performances, and hopefully we can, all the hard work they've done in the off season, that we can add, progress that onto the football pitch and start to be more productive in how we play and score more goals and concede less goals.
Yeah.
And I think we've done elements of that last year, but I feel that we're a better team now this year.
And the cameras are coming this year as well. Did I see that? That, you know, there's going to be a couple of games live on TV.
Yeah, we play Treaty on TV at the Cross, so that'll be a good game.
Yeah.
Munster Derby. Hopefully we can get a big crowd at it. And look,
but even for the girls to kind of say, look, we're going to be on the TV, it's like it's given proper credibility now, and that's what they want with the 2020 vision over the last few years, that, you know, women's sport has to be covered to the same levels as the men's.
Yeah, no, look, I think it is. It's getting there. And look, as managers, you can be impatient because you want it now. And it's like, look, there is a lot of things moving in the right direction, but it's hard because we want things to happen now, and they're going to take time and do things right and do it in the right way. But it's brilliant for the girls, because to get to play it under the lights on a night game on TV is like class. And that's what they all want to do. And it's brilliant for us as well, because see, with your 17s and 19s academy, and they see that it's something they can aspire to and want to have.
Yeah.
Whereas you'd love to see more games on like normal TV.
Yeah.
Like the streams are great. How many people really sign up and watch it on the streams, and are young girls sitting there on their laptops or computers and watching it? And I think that's the hard part of to grow the league. You probably need more games on TV.
Even if they walked into a bar and they saw it was on the television. It's just simple things like that where it's, where they see that, you know, that's the pathway for me. I'm going to be on TV as well. I'm going to be a star as well. Like,
and I think that's why with the Women's League in England has helped with the Premier League money and the way it's done, because the money that gets distributed down towards women's football and by the FA and promoted on TV in England is probably what's grown the game a lot. What's been able to help them keep progressing.
And then that's gone to all the way to the national level, where they've won the European Championships in the finals of World Cup. And so hopefully the same thing happens here. So the people listening here, like, what would you say to them about, you know, trying to come and support them this season?
Yeah, no, I think, look, come out and watch games. Come and come and see what the girls can do. Like, there's nothing better than watching live football. And I think we've got a really young, quality, talented group of girls, which I'd expect to see at least three or four of them future Ireland internationals.
Brilliant.
So come and see them.
Yeah.
Come and have a look at them. Like, come and
be able to brag to your buddies in the future that you saw them playing League of Ireland.
Bring your kids out. Bring your kids out. Let them come and watch games. Like, it's hard enough for young girls to be able to watch female sport, but like, you've got a place at Turner's Cross that they can come and watch.
Brilliant for young girls to be able to see this, especially if they're playing for teams around the city at the moment at underage. Let them see that they can go all the way to play for Cork.
So we've done a lot of work in terms of off the pitch stuff.
Yeah.
Going out to clubs, trying to get girls more interested, trying to get clubs to bring players out to games. And we've done a lot of that work, and we're hoping these young girls to come out and watch games and like look at Aline from Eva Mangin like, and say, that girl's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be her.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Eva has the potential to go all the way.
Yeah.
So, and there's three or four other girls coming through, like at Orla, Ellie O'Brien, Heidi, Neve Cotter, Kira Senna, Clodagh. Like, that's eight, nine girls at 16, 17, 18 that could potentially be future Ireland internationals, have all played international from a youth age.
Yeah.
And could potentially, hopefully, we'd be seeing them at 5, 6 years, 10 years' time playing in the World Cup.
In the same way to like Saoirse Noonan played for you a few years back and then went on, you know, to play in the UK and is also playing, you know, for the Irish team as well. Like, you know, so it's that, and Denise O'Sullivan obviously playing in the US. And, you know, there's loads there, like
there's
Megan Connolly, like, you know.
I mean, we unfortunately, we didn't get Megan here.
Yeah, he didn't, yeah.
But like, Corinthians are able to use Megan as someone for the young girls to look up to and look out for and say, look, she came through our club, through our programme, look at where she is now.
Yeah.
And if we can promote that more within our club and within schoolgirls' clubs and say, look, that's the pathway, like do work at schoolgirl club, hopefully potentially get an opportunity at Cork City, and then you go from Cork City, and if you do the right things off the pitch and on the pitch, then the opportunities can be massive.
So the big message is come out and support the team.
Yeah, come out and support the girls. They deserve it. They deserve it. They put in the work. They're there every training session. They train full-time. They study. They work. Like, the girls are doing everything they can to give themselves an opportunity, and we need people to come out and support them, because as much as they're not full-time footballers, they act like it.
Well, Danny, thanks for coming in. Best of luck to the season. We're hoping that you get a big crowd at the Cross on Saturday and for the rest of the season as well. But thanks a million for coming in.
No, no problem. Look, hopefully we get a decent crowd on Saturday and the rain holds off anyway, and we'll be fine going into the weekend. And look, played a team who won the league last year, so can we hopefully we can go into it and maybe upset them and upset a lot of people, because there's no one expecting us to go out and get anything out of the game. So we're going to go out and play our way and try and get a result that we feel we can get out of the game.
Brilliant. Well, best of luck.
No worries. Thank you.
Yeah, interesting conversation, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was very good. Like, it's funny how even when he was growing up in London and he had the Cork connection and the Irish connection, you know, the family's from Cork and he has his Celtic kits while everyone else is in their England and Rangers top and this fella's cutting around in his Celtic gear. It's a very Irish upbringing.
It is, but, you know, you can see then that he's a fierce passion for Cork City.
He does.
You know,
he
and
does.
That goes right through all men and women. You can see just the club, you know, and the fact that there was this thing, anyone outside of Cork, he mentioned, was like an enemy back in the day. You know,
he made a good point as well about modern day football, not a Cork City thing or a League of Ireland thing, but everyone's friends with each other. And back then, as you said as well, there's himself, Liam Kearney, Dan Murray, John O'Flynn was involved. A lot of that squad ended up staying at the club as coaches.
Family or something.
And even he said, you know, going into the Ayrshire City League 11s that they were at the time, and he highlighted Owen Heary, but there was obviously other players as well from other clubs that he wouldn't have spoken to or gotten on with. But there was very much a Cork City against the world then. And it's back a bit now. I know that towards the end of last year, Richie Holland was very strong on that as well, that it is us against the world. We're like our own country down here, that you know, it's us against everyone. And that's very much how it was back then.
And actually,
and Murph still has that.
Tim was talking about that, showing him the old videos or something like that. I remember he was saying
about
before
what the club is,
what the club is about, which is important. But just judging by the women's team, it sounds exciting. I mean, Colleen sounds like a great signing.
Yeah, she is. I remember speaking to Colleen the day she signed, and she has a wealth of experience in a football sense, but even off the pitch, she's been involved in sports marketing and football marketing, so she could be a huge asset to us off the pitch as well. And not just Colleen, but there's Orlo O'Mahony, Danny mentioned again, the Cork connection. Aoife Robinson's come in from Bowes. He was talking about having one or two more.
Yeah,
maybe not for this week, but
potentially
over the next week or so.
Players that could go on to play for our country, he thinks, like, you know.
Definitely, if not more. Yeah. Like some of the players we have there, like Clodagh Fitzgerald made her debut last year in goal, 15.
Yeah.
Like 10 years from now, she'll still be considered a young player. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there are players there who we all know will go on to represent Ireland. They could go on to play at the Women's Super League in England. There's an incredible standard there. I know last year and the year before, the league finishes were disappointing, and like I don't think they actually reflected what they're capable of. And I think Murph knows that and has said that in his press conferences as well. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see now how they get on Saturday.
And let's hope they get support.
Exactly.
And that's the big thing that he was trying to say, like, come on.
If we get a big crowd out to support the girls,
get
a decent result as well, hit the ground running and have something to build on for the rest of the season. And
especially
and go
then
from
when the cameras come for the game against Treaty and stuff like that. Like, that'll be big.
That'll be brilliant, moment, yeah. We're actually, funnily enough, the only club so far that haven't been on TG Cahart now. It's just pure chance. There's no reason behind it. But even for Turner's Cross as a whole, there are some stadiums in the Women's League that, from a TV point of view, isn't the best backdrop. Yeah. Turner's Cross will just look good.
Yeah.
It's a good advert for the Women's Premier Division, but Cork City as well.
Yeah,
and what we have to offer, and if we get a big crowd in for that one too, and we kind of showcase what we're about on TV, then that'll be really good.
But we said at the start, we have not one but two guests in, and I think, look, a lot of people are interested in the commercial side as well and all the different sponsors we have, because we have a lot of sponsors.
We do, we've a lot of new ones this year as well, yeah.
And do you know what, it takes a lot to kind of fund. Danny talked about it, it's a loss making, you know, in many ways. Both the academy, Liam said it last week, and you know, the whole women's side of it as well, we need support from businesses. Eventually all these things will make money, but at the start to build up all the different age profiles. So I think maybe we should bring in Anthony to talk about it.
Yeah, Anthony's here as well. He's been in the role now. He's been at the club since, I think, May or June last year.
Yeah.
But he's brought a lot of new sponsors on board, particularly even this week. We announced OCE, which I'm sure Anthony will touch on.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of new sponsors on board, and we'll hear from Anthony about what's available around the club, from the men's team to the women's team and right down to the academy as well.
Well, we're joined by a second guest this week. Welcome to the podcast, Anthony.
Thanks, Stephen. Delighted to be here.
Just a quick one. You joined the club last year as commercial manager. Where were you before that?
Yeah, so prior to that, my previous experiences would have been in business development and account management within kind of HR and recruitment industry. So prior to joining the club, I worked for 4 years with Osborne Recruitment in Penrose Wharf. So again, it was business development, client relationships, identifying job opportunities at that stage for Osborne to work on. So always been involved in client relationships and relationship building across businesses and companies in Cork. So just coming with a very different product offering from recruitment. And
a bit different to recruitment, all right, unless you're going to recruit a few players for us as well,
maybe so. But yeah, look, it's been a learning curve for me since joining the club. Everybody from Aina to Dermot to all of the management team have been very supportive and very helpful to me. And look, we're getting there in terms of where we would like to be in terms of identifying sponsors and bringing new sponsors on board. But I suppose, look, there's always opportunity for everybody and anybody really across the business community to get behind the club and help and support us in various different ways. So I suppose from a commercial side, in conversations that I'm having with people, some find that they've never been approached by the club before.
Interesting. Yeah.
And they would like to get involved, but they feel their offering might be too small.
Like what can you start as? Like what's the smallest thing you could get involved with? Let's say there's a small business owner listening to this today, and like how could they get involved?
Yeah, so there's various different opportunities. So starting with match ball sponsors and match day partners, that's a huge way for a business to get their message out and get their company logo featured on match day programs.
And what's the cost in something like that?
So cost for a match ball sponsor, you're looking around the €500 plus VAT per game. For the match day partner, you're looking at €1,000 depending on the game, again, plus VAT. But what that gives you is, as I say, feature and promotion of your business on match day across the PA system, across our social media channels, and your logo on the match day program. It also gives you access to the Easy Living Suite an hour prior to kickoff. So just a nice way for a business owner or company to treat their staff or suppliers customers that they might have. We're doing this by way of supporting Cork City Football Club. Would you like to come along as our guests or, you know, bringing along staff members and so on? So it's a kind of a behind the scenes opportunity for somebody that you wouldn't always see access to in the grounds on the night. So
ideal maybe for somebody maybe launching a new product or a new location in Cork or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look at the match ball sponsors that we've had so far, I mean, last Friday night for the UCD game, we had Crazy Monkey, an e-scooter business down in Douglas.
Yeah,
Chris there is in the early stages of his business and growing the business. So it was a good opportunity for him to get his message and company name and logo out there and just get people looking at it and it becoming more recognisable. And also for the previous game, we had, again, a startup business, Clodagh O'Connor, with G&G Kombucha. So again, different offering, but a good way to outline and identify your business and just get you in front of the large social media following and match night experience and develop things that way.
And I see that you got a brand new sponsor on the shirt, on the sleeve.
Yeah, so delighted to have Jim Kelly from OCE Electrical on a sleeve of men's jersey for this season. Also some great companies and names coming behind on the women's side. And as you know, the women kicked their season off this coming Saturday against Piemont United. So encouraging everybody to get behind the women for the season ahead.
And is there opportunities still available with both the women, Stephen, the academy and stuff like
that? I mean, we've had some new sponsors in the likes of Affidea and Henry Financial Services coming on board, but there are still opportunities available on the women's side and particularly on the academy side as well. So a big focus for me in the coming weeks and months will be to develop on and I suppose highlight the availability of opportunities to get behind the women's team and the great work that Liam Kearney is doing with the Junior Academy and just creating a story and a narrative, I suppose, in terms of supporting the good work that Liam is already doing. But it's by sponsorships and investments and commercial support that will drive the academy and the women's side and get us higher up the table and, you know, allow the club to offer more potentially in terms of what's available within the academy structure. So excited to get involved in it. Great opportunities for business and my door is always open.
So if anyone's listening, how do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, so you'll find me on LinkedIn. You'll find me on anthony@corkcityfc.ie or mobile number 083-031-7834. Or you can contact the club directly, and I'll happily return a call. And as I say, look, it's all about just having discussions with companies, irrespective of your budget. We can talk. There's something that we can put together that will benefit both the club and the business, and tailor make your message to give it maximum to possible exposures and so on.
Well, Anthony, thanks for coming in, and I'm hoping that there's a few listeners with some budget that maybe they're fans of the club that they
absolutely,
might get in touch with you.
Fans of the club, or I'm speaking to people who used to go to games with their granddad, and 40 years later they find themselves sitting in the same seats. There's that nostalgia thing as well. So, yeah, look, as I say, irrespective of budget, there's always something and some opportunity available at the club. So more than happy to speak to anyone should they be interested.
Great to hear that, you know, you can get involved for, you know, something like €500 for a match day ball sponsorship, and maybe entertain your staff and things. Like, those things are good, like, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah. Like, there's packages there that will cater from a massive organisation to some individual with a startup business or something like that. Or you can come along and, you know, there's the Easy Living Suite, as Anthony said, where you can bring your team from work, or the Corner Flag now as well, which we have, where buy tickets there. You can bring a couple of fellas from work there. And there's a lot there for kind of the corporate side of it as well, and what the club can offer them in terms of the coverage from social media and the streams and stuff like that. Match programme as well, obviously they're front and centre on that, which there's hundreds of those sold on a Friday night as well. So there's a lot of coverage to be had for your business there.
And listen, if anyone wants to sponsor the podcast, we are doing well in the charts still.
We are, yeah. We're still in the Spotify charts. We are high up in the football charts and still doing well in France.
Yeah.
So if there is anyone that wants to get involved here.
I don't know, Cuisine de France or someone. Or
maybe.
But listen, no, like, this will be out every week. It's another opportunity to get your brand out there to maybe, you know, loyal listeners, probably loyal fan base, and maybe people around the country. There's different people around the world listening as well.
We had a dive into the analytics there. We've got listeners in the US, Australia, all around Africa, all around Europe. So as Stephen said, this is a weekly podcast. We're not going anywhere now. This is in the weekly calendar. We're staying here. It's a new bit of content for the club that's going to be coming out every week. And as the season progresses and when the women kick off on Saturday, from next week on, we'll have roundups weekly from men's first team, women's first team, a look at the academy. So this would be a great place to expose your business as well if you wanted to get involved here.
So that leaves us to kind of just look forward briefly to the big game on Saturday night as well for the men's team against Longford. You mentioned it briefly a while ago.
Yeah, Longford on a Saturday for a change. No Friday game this year.
Might be handy for the away support though.
Yeah, you might get a crowd up there. Yeah, I know there. I think I heard that it's a bus being organised for supporters. So there should be a decent crowd there. It's one of those ones. We were there in 2022. Decent ground, actually, Longford have.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of seats there. There's four stands, which is more than a lot of the other grounds have.
So it's
a nice place to go. It's not too far away, so there might be a decent crowd. But yeah, Longford haven't actually played in, they haven't played their last two games. They were called off against Wexford because the pitch was unplayable. They were called off against Bray because of the weather up that end of the country last week. So
so is this their first game of the season?
No, it's their second. So they played on the opening night against Finn Harps and they lost it. I think they were 2-0 up and it was a 93rd minute winner or something that Finn Harps got. So they haven't kicked the ball for a while. So
yeah, even I'm forgetting that we're four games in already.
I know, and Stephen Henderson as well is the manager up there.
Oh, sure, I forgot Stephen. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
So familiar to anyone that knows, you know, the El Clásico, whatever you call him.
El Clásico. And obviously, Colin Henderson, his son, is at Cork City currently as well. So there's a connection there. But yeah, we'll see how that one goes. Greg Bulger was back on Friday, so you'll expect him to be involved. He'll
might
be
get more
huge
thrown
addition,
off. He looked good when he came on, and he was kind of leading as you'd expect him to, kind of giving directions and stuff like that on the pitch.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know where we are yet on the injury front, because there was a couple of players dropping last Friday. Harry Nevin was down for a while, Evan McLaughlin was down for a while, but they all continued and carried on, so we don't know if there's anything there.
Yeah, it's early in the week too, I suppose.
Exactly, we'll know more. Tim's press conference
is Saturday.
Yeah, we've an extra day as well, so Tim's press conference will be on Wednesday.
Keep out in the social, keep an eye out in the social.
Exactly, we'll have that up on Tuesday morning or Thursday morning. Yeah. And we'll know more then.
Well, look, I suppose we better wrap this one up because it has been a bit of a longer episode again. Thanks again for listening, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Yeah, thanks for listening. And if you haven't already, make sure to give us a rating on Spotify as it helps with the chart position. And we'll be back next week. We'll see you then.
See you then.